The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy of Lectromech, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio is Tim McLaughlin, CEO of a company called SiteWorks, SiteWorx. As I was teasing him before the program began, he's probably the best kept secret in town. In a town full of people who can keep secrets, this is the best kept secret. They're a company that started in town here and kind of blew up, working with all kinds of projects involving websites, and very, very successful. And he caught my attention recently because of a press release for a successful story helping out the Department of State when they were in a little bit of a bind. They kind of swept in and solved a lot of problems down there. Before we begin and talk about the State Department, Tim, tell us about your background, how you wound up with this company called SiteWorks, please.
Sure, absolutely. Thanks for having me here, John. I'm very excited about it. So I co-founded SiteWorks in 2002. The focus was on delivering better digital experiences, although back then we probably called those predominantly websites. And the vision was always to engage with enterprise or government clients to understand how they could engage their customers or citizens, in the case of government, so that they can understand and communicate with them better. It turns out we, as you might recall, 2002 was a rather tough time to be focused on web. So we ended up focusing more on commercial, despite being headquarters in the DC area. And that's been a lot of our heritage since then. So we do a lot of work in the finance space, the manufacturing space, and lots of other areas. But recently, as you mentioned, we have done a couple of high-profile government projects, and we're pretty excited about those.
Yeah, that's great. I think that gives you credibility with my audience, because a lot of times the audience may be involved with contractors that get 100% of the business from the federal government, and they walk in, and there's certain assumptions that are made, and maybe they're not, up to speed with some current trends in technology. That's a discreet phrase, I think. and a company like yours, who's out on the streets getting in street fights all the time and making mistakes and figuring it out and learning new stuff, maybe you have a sharper knife in the fight here, and I think it's a good position to be in. Let's talk about my listeners here real quick. A lot of them are project managers. They go to the PMI meetings. They get their certificates. They learn about agile design, and they try to implement it. And I think agile software development is really easy to talk about, but really hard to do. And you get a little star on your forehead because you've actually done it. Tell us about the State Department, the problems they encountered, and how you folks swept in to try to help them out.
We're very excited, and it was great to work with the State Department. One of the things that we brought to the table is how we do agile development. Unfortunately, agile is almost an abused word these days. It ends up in a lot of cases meaning no documentation or no process. Not really what we would consider to be agile. That might just be no process. We adhere to a lot of different tools and methodologies to actually make that happen. And one of the key things that we focus on with agile is transparency. So with our clients, in this case, an agency, they have full transparency as to what all of our team members are doing, what they're committing to the code repository, how that's getting deployed, how the change management, which is a huge problem, we see it all the time, how the change management is occurring on the servers, especially when you start deploying to things like AWS and you've got different staging environments. And I'm not going to go off the technical deep end, but suffice it to say, there's a lot of tools and processes to make Agile work. It is not a lack of tools. So it's very much a great methodology. It does mean fast sprints. So we typically do deliverables on a two-week basis. So no big 6-month or year-long launches. It's going to be a two-week deliverable. And in some cases in the commercial sector, we even do 1-week deliverables. So it's all about fast and seeing results fast. But it doesn't mean crazy.
Yeah, that makes sense. So let me paint the picture here. The Department of State has a place called the Bureau of Consular Affairs, and they were using a product by Adobe. I think it's a part of the Adobe Marketing Cloud.
AEM.
Yeah, and they experienced some problems, And I'm assuming, make some assumptions here. Maybe one of the managers there called up Adobe and said, well, can you recommend a company that can help us? And they said, well, this company called SiteWorks does a lot of commercial work, but maybe they can come downtown and help you out. And so that's painting the picture. So we have Adobe is a system. It's almost like a content management system that is sitting on Amazon for the State Department. So we have a lot of good topics here. We got cloud, sure. We got security, and we have agile software development. And so yep. Is that a pretty good picture?
So yeah, we do work on... predominantly on existing products. So we're not a company that comes in and says, okay, let's write lots and lots and lots of software, because we look at that as something that you're going to maintain. And 5 years from now or 2 years from now, you're going to start saying, oh my gosh, the amount that I have to pay just to maintain that system is overwhelming me. So in the commercial sector, it's very typical. They want to go buy a product that where they get economies of scale on the maintenance side. That's where Adobe comes in. That's where even what Amazon's doing now with their infrastructure. Same idea. So it's an economy of scale for hardware, just like there's an economy of scale for software. If there are certain agencies within the government, they're getting tuned into this. And obviously, State Department was in this case. They called us to help them with travel.state.gov. Part of that probably has to do with our experience and success on the Adobe platform, marketing and customer engagement platform. We were named the Partner of the Year last year. So I'm sure that was a factor when they called us.
Partner for Adobe, not the State
Partner
Department.
Partner for Adobe of the yeah. year, yeah. In fact, although we did start with the State Department prior to that, so I don't think any of the local people knew that.
So you had a past history, so they knew about you.
What we really were known for is just, we've been told by Adobe that they're very happy with the outcomes of our projects because they never hear from the clients because the clients are happy. Unfortunately, for software companies, sometimes they only get called when there's a challenge. And we're good at making sure that everything's done right, so everybody gets delivered on time, on budget.
I've heard the story before about challenges. There was a company in 2009 called Omniture.
Yep.
And what happened was Adobe bought this company out and kind of took it piece by piece by piece and put these six pieces together and rebranded them, renamed them under Adobe Analytics, Adobe Target, Adobe Social, Adobe Experience Manager, Media Optimizer and Campaign. And this implementation uses one aspect of it, which is Adobe Experience Manager. Is that right?
Correct. We work on all the different products, but in this case, it was pure AEM, as we refer to Experience Manager.
So from the perspective of some of the State Department, why AEM? Why not Marketo? Why not custom? What's the advantage of using Adobe?
Well, first off, the State Department wasn't going out on a limb on this. If you were to pull any of the analysts who cover the sector of content management, which is really what the challenge they were facing was, you would pull the Forrester or the Gartner report, and they would both rank Adobe's product in this category top right, meaning they are the best of breed according to third-party analysts in the sector. And these are big analysts who do a lot of diligence. I think you don't have to take my word for it or Adobe's word for it. You can go look at third parties who basically get paid to do this research. The other thing is, so I would say that's probably a third party affirmation of that decision. But another one would be if you actually did an evaluation of the products in the sector, and we don't work exclusively on Adobe. We work on many other products that compete with it because sometimes, you know, a hammer isn't always the tool for the job. So essentially we look at other products as well. We're familiar with them, but Adobe, I think the assessment that Forrester and Gartner have come to is a pretty astute one. And if they're, you know, not top, they're certainly in the top three, depending on your needs. So that's really where the State Department turned to Adobe in this case. We are working on some other federal contracts, in this case on the defense side, where they're using the same tool set. And the reason is because you can really get the market faster and more, faster, more cost effectively. And then the maintenance over the longer duration is going to be a heck of a lot easier. So if you need to make changes, here's a quick example. The Ebola issue that you've seen does impact and is on the travel.state.gov website because it's relevant for travelers. You have to make that change expeditiously, and you have to get that information out to the potential travelers so that they're aware of those risks.
So Agile used in a different frame here. Agile means your website can quickly adapt to changing situations, whether health-related or security-related.
Correct. And another simple example where we used AEM is in a multi-billion-dollar retailer that you've all used, I guarantee. They were trying to do basically Black Friday offers for in the retail business. So Black Friday is obviously a really big transaction day for them. And it would take them an entire month to put together those promotional offers to get them out onto the website. that's not a very good solution if, in fact, it turns out some new product comes out or you want to release or change the product information 3 days before Black Friday. So in that case, we used Adobe AEM to be able to be more dynamic with content changes. Again, different use case, but the same need is really changing content quickly.
Great. Let's take a little break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the State Department and why they picked Adobe and some of the challenges they faced and the problems, and talk about big picture issues like responsive design, and teach on the little topic called computer security and what kind of security components does Adobe have baked into their system. I'm kind of interested in that. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio this morning, we have Tim McLaughlin, CEO of Siteworks, Siteworx. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Tim McLaughlin, CEO of a local company called Siteworks, not very radio friendly, Siteworx, siteworks.com. Find out all kinds of information, get white papers, get blogs, get all kinds of stuff. They came to my attention when I saw a press release. They went to the State Department and helped them out with an interesting little project. And I thought this was very fascinating. Fascinating because they used Adobe, and fascinating because it almost seems like social media marketing or salesy or marketing or responding to customers and maybe the federal government, an aspect of the federal government responding to end users and citizens. So I think this is a very good story to tell. I think a lot of agencies want to be able to what tools can I use to involve citizens more? And this is exactly what it does. We talked about this site and responding to citizens' needs as far as health concerns goes, as far as Ebola.
Absolutely. So, I mean, it's all about being dynamic, fundamentally, and responsive. And in fact, as much as everybody tries to with their website or even their mobile applications, they're going to put something out that may be wrong or needs to be adjusted rapidly. And I think every single website owner, operator has had the unfortunate experience of putting something out and going, oh, that's not right, or that's not what I meant. And obviously on travel.state.gov, they're communicating things that have national impact. So being able to change or respond rapidly to that and or control the workflow before it goes out on the website, that's a big deal. A lot of people look at a website and think, oh, it's just a bunch of files. And I'm here to tell you that, especially in the corporate world, it absolutely is not. There is so much that goes on underneath a website that it's really just the tip of the iceberg.
So take a look at Adobe Marketing Cloud. We talked about Gartner in the upper quadrant there and everything else. Now, if I were to do my little John Gilroy classification scheme here, would I put Adobe Marketing Cloud in with Marketo and HubSpot, or would I put it in with SharePoint? Or where does it fit in? Is it not fit in any of these categories?
Well, actually, none of those three products would be considered competitors to what Adobe AEM does. If you were to take a look at Marketo, they would compete with other Adobe products, but not the AEM product that's being used at State Department. So as you kind of identified, it is a complicated sector, and many people or many products like to claim that they do it all. Unfortunately, it's not quite there yet. Adobe has been very acquisitive, and so they have been rolling in additional functionalities. And those are getting integrated within their ecosystem. But likewise, you have Oracle doing the same thing with their recent purchase of a local company called Eloqua, which incidentally is a competitor of Marketo. So there's different products that meet different needs, whether it be communicating on email channels, communicating on web, integrating into mobile applications, or as you mentioned earlier, doing analytics across all those channels, which would be a product like Omniture or even Google Analytics. So there's many different pieces to the puzzle. Unfortunately, you can't just buy one and solve all the problems in one place just yet. And then I would say, actually, SharePoint, while it's a great product for storing documents in a repository and that type of thing, doing rapid communications on websites and change management around it, it's a little onerous, at least out of the box. So there may be some ways to do it, but it's not really designed around that.
Now, one of the advantages of a product like SharePoint or a product like the Adobe Marketing Cloud is that they come with security baked in. So you don't have to worry about John Gilroy sitting in the back room coding things and making sure it's FSMA compliant and compliant with this and compliant with that. And so I think that's one advantage of this Adobe product, and this maybe should be a marketing point that they have, is that, well, if you're considering a site that has to interact with citizens and you, of course, worried about security, it's baked in here. So those checkboxes are already marked.
That's absolutely the case. I think a lot of the things, the plumbing is the stuff you always tend to forget. So people look at it and say, oh, it's, you know, it's a page. All I need to do is change the page. Well, the reality is that probably need to get someone in legal to approve it. You probably need someone in communications to take a look at it. So now you've got a workflow. Now you have to deal with that workflow. And then ultimately, when you put it up there, how do you make sure that someone else can't change it afterward? And if they do, how do you find out who did it? So all those things come into sort of plumbing functionality that you forget about, or people tend to forget about when they say, oh, it's an easy project, we can just do this.
When we talk about agile software development and being transparent, what does that mean to you, and what does it mean to for my govies? If we would contract, if I worked for an agency and I contracted you to do something, what is transparency? Why are you different from other companies? What does this transparency mean?
So what we try to do is make our clients aware of everything that we are doing on their behalf at any point in time. So we track every single task we do. We tie it directly to the code that would be contributing to that project. So for example, as a State Department, they were very happy and impressed with a whole another set of tools that we use called the Atlassian product suite. It's actually an Australian company that probably be maybe going public at some point. There's some debate around that.
How do you spell that?
Atlas, as in the guy who holds up the world.
Yeah, like so, the mountains Atlas in Africa,
with,
the Atlas Mountains.
Atlas with another S-I-A-N, yeah. So Atlassian. It's a maybe not another non-radio friendly name. But anyway, we use that suite and have actually integrated it with the Adobe product so that we can manage all of our releases and all that sort of stuff around change management, which is a whole nother can of worms that, again, it's a plumbing thing that you don't think about. But for anybody who's operated a large website with lots of content, it's one of those things that sort of bites you in the butt later on when you go, oh yeah, that's really important.
And what I found working with software developers is that if a project starts on May 1st, and they have a pretty good idea, they could, you know, back of an envelope with a pencil, figure out where they're going. What can happen is June 1st, bang, Amazon Redshift is released. Bang, there's Linux containers that are released. Bang, there's a new product comes out. And all of a sudden, these products can impact the project itself. And so you really have to be able to incorporate new things as you're going through the project, don't you? Because they're going to impact the delivery.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything we do, that's kind of why Agile showed up in the first place. Agile showed up because the technological world is changing so rapidly that if you plan a project and you take 2 years to do it, by the time you get to the end of 2 years, there's a good chance that the consumer's world has changed. So let's take a recent event. The new iPhone 6 and 6 Plus came out. So Apple has roughly 40% of the American mobile device usage. And I know you often hear statistics about how Android is winning the battle. What they're winning is on the global scale. But if you look at, if you're concerned about American citizens, you have about 40% penetration of the Apple devices. So this new phone that's already sold 4 million on its first day is going to have a pretty substantial impact in terms of viewership. And if you actually look at the statistics on iPhone usage, they view a lot more and they spend a lot more time on their phones. So the end result is you now have a whole new set of screen sizes, a whole new set of resolutions that you now have to worry about that you didn't have to worry about a week ago.
Exactly what I described. You start May 1st by June 1st. You know, there's a disruptive event and you have to be flexible and loosen. And I think that's the whole idea with Agile is that you can build it in modules or adaptable sequences that anticipate that change. Very difficult to do, though.
It's difficult, but I think it's only difficult if you have been doing it the old way. So if you were to recruit kids out of school these days, I think most of them would be pretty much fall right into place with this new way of operating. It's very much like all these content management systems, they typically don't use a relational database. And this is getting technical for a moment, but everybody who uses databases thinks of these relational databases. They use a different type of database. And what we found is developers who are familiar with what's referred to as NoSQL have just a different way of looking at things. And it's a whole different way of approaching things. The people who have the hardest time approaching NoSQL are the ones who learned SQL.
Of course.
The people who have no other experience, they immediately adapt to it and don't sort of have those preconceptions.
Speaking of preconceptions, so I'm not going to go into into CompUSA and buy me a box of Adobe Experience Manager, am I? No, this is a subscription-based model.
Correct. So Adobe, actually, even on their consumer products like Photoshop, they're moving to a subscription-based pricing model. In fact, you see that with all the software companies. They're all moving that direction. Microsoft's doing the same.
So this is the State Department with citizen consumer-based site that uses license-based software. subscription-based software and is sitting in the cloud. I mean, this is the story to tell. I know, and the cloud sits down as the Amazon cloud. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah. So we work on we frequently do work on the Amazon cloud, but as you mentioned earlier, Azure, Microsoft's product for its offering for the cloud is also coming online. So again, we look at it and say it's an infrastructure, and how do you manage that infrastructure? So that's really where Siteworks gets involved, is how to keep track of where things are, what's going on, and where things move on to those different environments.
Who chose AWS? You, Adobe, State?
I think it pre-existed us. So, but a lot of our other projects are actually AWS deployments, so we have a lot of experience in that. And in fact, we do have another federal contract where we're doing the exact same thing.
Mm-hmm. Now you have a little experience. That's great. Let's take a break. We come back, we'll talk more about maybe switch gears, talk about responsive design and contrast it with apps and where to use what and what's the most expensive and what's fast and what's best for some of our federal listeners. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Tim McLaughlin, CEO of Siteworks. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Tim McLaughlin, CEO of a local company called Site, Siteworx, Siteworks. And we're talking about websites and designing websites and agile software development. I've got to ask you about blogs and blogging. I have a blog called the Tech Tuesday blog. Does your company have a blog? Is there a blog you write? Maybe a blog that my listeners can read to keep up with all this?
We do post a blog. There's a lot of content on our website that's constantly being updated. I will admit, I am not writing a lot towards it, and I don't actually maintain my own blog. I have to admit, I tend to think there's a lot of media in the world, and I try to control how much I ingest it one time, because eventually I stop retaining.
That's interesting. What about Twitter? Are you folks active in Twitter, or what kind of a...
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we do a lot of communications, outbound communications through Twitter, and we do a lot of listening through Twitter as well, and sometimes on the behalf of our clients.
Well, great. Tell me about the difference between responsive design and native apps, and I've always scratched my head in trying to figure out the differences and when to use what where.
So responsive design is, I would say, has become the standard for web. Even Apple finally capitulated and recently made their website responsive. If you pull it up, it now has a mobile web experience, which I was happy to see, because for the longest time they had a desktop experience if you pulled it up on your phone. And they're a relatively conservative organization to move that direction. So responsive has become probably the new standard for web, in the sense that if you pick up if you go to a website on your desktop or you go to a website on your mobile phone, it's going to change the content that it shows you to the appropriate screen size and how you can actually interface with it. One quick way to test if a website is responsive, if you're curious, is to pull it up in Chrome or a very recent browser and resize the size of your browser on your desktop computer. And as you resize the browser, content should disappear. And if you move it all the way down to the size of about what you think a mobile screen or a mobile device screen would look like, it should look like the interface you would get if you were to pull that website up on your phone. So that's what we would call a responsive website. There's a lot of technology that goes into making that happen, but that is the new way people do websites.
Speed penalty for desktop users of responsive, or no problem?
Not really. Not if it's done right. I would say there's a penalty if you do it wrong, but that's true of almost all things on web.
I imagine there are commercial organizations that have both, or one or two, or just one or the other. If I were a company selling John Gilroy shoes, and I've been selling for 20 years, and then I turn to you and say, hey, Tim, I want to make this a responsive website, is that a major challenge? That transition is very hard, or you just build it from scratch?
So responsive web's not really a good thing to do retrofitting. You pretty much need to overhaul at least the web side experience. That doesn't mean your plumbing, if you will, behind it, where your content comes from, or the databases don't necessarily have to change, but how you present it would need to be overhauled. A mobile app really shouldn't be confused with a mobile web experience, because one's in a browser, so you're going to a URL. The other one's if you go to the App Store or the equivalent on for the particular Android platform. So in some way, you're either downloading an app or you're going to a website. The way we look at apps is, you use an app for when you need to engage with a client or a customer or a citizen frequently. So let's take, for example, if for some reason people were getting updates on their township or the roads or emergencies, and they're really tied in and they need to know those things recently, frequently, At that point, it probably makes a lot of sense to deploy an app, because essentially that app will be living on their phone all the time and they'll be interacting. They won't necessarily even have to log in to get the appropriate information for them. A mobile web experience or a desktop web experience is when you're interacting less frequently. So for example, I may go, I'm opening up a brewery that's another investment that I'm personally involved with. When I had to go to the Virginia has the ABC, which controls alcohol. We went to the Virginia ABC website to find out the regulations. I'm not going to hang out on that regulation website, nor do I want to have that on my phone at all points in time. There may be certain things I would want to, but the reality is I'm going to go there once, I'm going to apply for my permit, and then I probably won't go back to that site a whole ton over time. So there are things that make sense to be on web, and there's things that make sense to be in an app.
Now, perhaps if you're an attorney who specializes in tax law, I'm just stretching this out, and you have to go to the Virginia Code frequently, there may be an application
Absolutely.
For that. But, I mean, it has to vary so much from situation to situation and agency to agency as well. And
Right.
so for a CIO of a federal agency to walk downstairs and talk to Joe Blow and go, we need an app for that, the defense is, well, let's see what the use case is and give me a piece of paper and see exactly what you have to use it for. Maybe there isn't an app for that, or why should there be?
So the minimum bar really should be a web experience, because web is you can Google for a web, for the content. You can search for that content on the web. You can't really search effectively through apps. So when someone's trying to find, for example, the regulations on alcohol at a federal level, they're going to go to Google, they're going to search for them there, and they're going to find them if they're on the web. If they're in an app, they aren't necessarily going to find them. So I would say the minimum bar is to have a good and comprehensive website. And then an application or a mobile app would actually sit on top of that. It may represent some of that additional information. So let's take your scenario of I'm an actual regulator and I need those regulations on my phone all the time. What you can do, and we do this for our clients, is you can make an app that might be used in the field that would download those from the website and make them available on their phone, even if they're disconnected. And we do that, for example, in B2B scenarios where you have people working in the field or in facilities where they don't have connectivity, or for catalogs and things like that, like if you've ever used the Amazon app.
So from a classification perspective, there's responsive web design and, I guess, traditional web design, and there's apps. There's native apps and there's web apps. Is that a dividing line there? Is that different types?
I would say there's native apps. Web apps are really websites that are, more interactive. It's probably a subtle distinction, but I would break it down into there's in-browser and there's not in-browser, meaning does it have an icon on your phone or do you go to your browser on your phone?
When you consider responsive design and apps, where does security fit in the software development lifecycle? Is that an aspect of it, or is that not even considered, or where does that fit in?
So I would say the security models for web are pretty well established, and if you're using an off-the-shelf product like AEM, like Adobe AEM, most of your security is going to be thought through, and you're not going to probably shoot yourself in the foot. Whereas I would say there are still some bad habits being practiced on mobile applications. You see, especially in like banking scenarios, where people are putting credentials onto the local phone, which can be exploited in certain environments. That's dangerous. And because the ecosystems in apps are not as well established, and frankly, the developers who are developing in those ecosystems are not as experienced, we're seeing, there's more risk on the app side because it's just not as mature.
From the perspective of a brewery owner in Vienna, and you have a website there, and you want to have an app, I mean, you'd have to choose what operating system that is. You'd have to go one flavor or the other. You'd have to make some very significant decisions. But if you had responsive design, it would be, by definition, open to all comers. I'm just thinking from a marketing perspective. That's the choice. That's the sequence. Huh?
For marketing, it's predominantly web. You always start web. And I could give it a perfect example of a hotel owner that we do a lot of work with, operator. They wanted to have an app because, similar to what you said, the CEO wanted an app. But the reality is when you go searching for a hotel room, do you start on Google or hotels.com or something like that? Or do you go and start downloading apps for hotels by brand in the App Store? I would pretty much say that undoubtedly 90%, 99% of people go the former. And so therefore, we were able to talk them into focusing really on web around working with the people they don't know. Apps are really for working with the people you do know, like employees in the field or existing customers who you interact frequently with.
Was that part of the discussion at State? Did they want an app for something?
No,
did that not even come
no they knew what they need. They knew they needed a website.
So what's the next step for this project? Is it going to get bigger, smaller, or just try to reproduce it in other agencies? Or where is this?
Actually, we're taking the website responsive right now. So that's an effort underway. So we're converting it. It wasn't originally, we didn't do the design for it. We did the implementation on AEM. We are helping them turn it into a responsive website. We did the same thing for a project a while ago with the FAA. So we're turning it into a responsive website, and because it's on AEM, we'll be implementing it, making the changes to make it effective on AEM.
Okay, let's take a break. We come back, we'll talk maybe a little about Apple's new product and give Tim a survey and find exactly what kind of phone he's using and why he chose that one, which is a good topic. You're listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Tim McLaughlin, CEO of Siteworks. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Tim McLaughlin. He is the CEO of Siteworks, Siteworx. You can go there and read press releases and get white papers, and it's a very nice-looking website. Maybe you can use that as the model for your website and see exactly what it's all about. Before the break, we started talking about responsive design and the federal government and all kinds of options and choices that people have. And I think that's what you're bringing to the game here is that, 5 or 6 years ago, there weren't as many choices for website designs and interacting with citizens and customers in the commercial area. And so that's the lesson of this whole interview is there's so much stuff out there. You really have to keep apprised of what's going on.
Absolutely. I mean, we have a group, for example, at Siteworks that's dedicated to just looking at new solutions and new ways of approaching problems. So we actually have dedicated resources who don't talk to our customers, but they talk to software vendors, hardware vendors, and really try to understand who's coming up with the next new gadget or device or software, because you can't stand still. And while we've been talking predominantly about Adobe, it's going to demand that Adobe continue to innovate if they want to stay in their position in the market. But likewise, there's going to be somebody new who's going to come out and do something very innovative. And everybody else is going to have to catch up. Or, as consultants, we're going to start working on that product.
2 months ago, I had Chris Carlson here. We did a whole one-hour show on Docker. And they just had DockerCon. It was the first conference center for Docker out in San Francisco. And a year ago, no one knew a Docker. It was just someone's thought and idea. So now there's conferences and people, I imagine there's training courses and books coming out on Docker,
absolutely,
which is just overnight.
Yeah, it's amazing how it happens. But I mean, necessity is the mother of invention. And as a result, Docker is filling a definite need that anybody in that sector and in the managed services space is familiar with.
And the software developers love it because it's quick and easy. Easy peasy, yep. Bang. You can do it so fast. And what about this test environment? What are the dependencies? It works real well. There are people who are listening to the show going, well, this guy kind of got a background in this and that and web design, and let's find out if he's really a card-carrying nerd. So I've come up with a scientific 10-question test, and I'm going to find exactly if you're a card-carrying nerd or not, and we'll know in the next few seconds whether or not. Okay, Tim, break into your house this afternoon. How many old-school desktops do I find there?
Well, I actually don't have anything sitting on a desk, except for some notebooks.
That's
computers.
The right answer.
But I do have this, and it gets a lot of interesting looks in my house, is I have a computer mounted on the wall.
Mounted on the wall.
It's actually, so you know how they at hospitals, they have the sliding things that slide up and down? So we actually went out and bought one of those from a hospital so I can stand up. It's got the keyboard mounted as part of it. My kids can do the same thing. They just slide it down because my kids are obviously a lot shorter, smaller than me. I can sit, stand, anybody in my household, depending on their height, can essentially have an adjustable, and it's in the living room. So it's actually a big screen, shows pictures. It's pretty cool.
Do you have one of those little walkers too that I've seen people with those silly. And how many cell phones have you purchased in the last year?
I don't know, a lot. Ooh. I just bought the new iPhone 6 Plus. We'll see if I downgrade to the 6, but it hasn't arrived yet. I think I get it tomorrow.
Do you have a personal Twitter feed?
I do, but I don't use it.
Okay. Do you have a personal blog?
I don't maintain one, correct.
And what kind of smartphone do you have?
I'm currently on the 5S, but going to the 6 Plus.
And what's the most popular app on that phone you've used in the last 30 days?
I will say the one I still use the most is Google Maps. Mm. At the end of the day, it's what made me buy the iPhone, and it's still, I used it to get here to your office. So mobile devices are probably the most compelling feature, in my opinion. In fact, if you take a look at people's habits and usage, I think it's probably the most important one. That doesn't mean it's the sexiest, newest one. It just means it's the one that people go to as much as email, of course.
Yeah. And we break into your house. How many tablet devices do we see floating around there?
We lose them, unfortunately. So I think we're
so
on.
So it used to be five.
I think we're on our seventh Kindle reader. Because my kids love to wander off while they're reading those. Yeah. And then we have probably three or four iPads and other stuff floating around, some Amazon Fires and stuff. So there, at one point, we stacked them all on the table. I think we had like 10 or 12.
Last time you were in the studio, I remember you got rid of all your CDs. Everything went virtual.
Oh yeah, I've been virtual for a long time, and everything's in the cloud for us. I don't suffer physical stuff.
And what social networking sites you active in?
LinkedIn predominantly. I don't really use Facebook a lot.
Last status update for LinkedIn?
I don't do statuses.
Okay. So. And the last book you read was electronic or paper?
Electronic. Absolutely.
Wow. So, yeah. Interesting. Number of devices at home. That's kind of fascinating. I always. Whenever I hear people on the radio, I always go, what kind of car do they drive? What, really? So they're talking about cars and the car guy and, well, what do they drive? So, and security guys just like you, well, or computer guy, what are you listening?
So, I bought a Tesla April of last year, so I was an early adopter on that. I have to say, I knew it felt a little risky that early. Of course, now in hindsight, it looks like it was clever, but I felt a little scary at that point in time. But it really is an amazing car. And what I think most people don't understand, if you ever have the opportunity to drive one, it's not only the driving experience, but they actually update the driving experience much like Apple updates the phone. So features will show up. In fact, they're supposed to roll out version 6 of their software. It's supposed to, or one of the rumored things it's gonna do is it's gonna do keyless entry using my phone now. So essentially my phone will be my key to get into the car. Wow. Right now I have a key in my pocket, and when I walk up, of course, the door handles slide out. There's no locks on the car. It's got a lot of things that are very different from how people are used to operating. You don't turn the car on or off. All you do is you sit down, you put in drive, and you drive off, and you park it, and you walk off. So there's a lot of user interface things that are quite different, and the fact that they continue to roll out software updates that literally change how the car drives, it's a totally fundamentally different way of approaching vehicles.
And I think the federal government in the next 5 years is going to have a fundamental different way for approaching websites, website design, and evaluating the efficacy of a website. And maybe they have to look at products like Adobe Marketing Cloud. Really? This is the federal government. What would they ever look at marketing? Come on, that's for the guys who sell shoes and tires, right? I mean, maybe my listeners, my govies, got to wear a different hat in the future. What do you think?
I think if you swapped out the word marketing for communications, you might find it's not that far of a gap. And in the end of the day, marketing is trying to listen to your customers and respond to those questions or make sure you're getting a ahead of them and communicating things out appropriately. So in a lot of ways, it's about communications. And I think that's a fair synonym in the government space. But I know in government, there's a big effort around making it a two-way street, right? So you're not just broadcasting everything to the citizens, you're also listening to the citizens and what they want. And that's really the same problem that marketing in the commercial world is trying to solve. So I would say it's a synonym. Maybe some people don't see that, but that's certainly my opinion.
Well, I think that's important. And the Adobe Experience Manager, when I was a young man, I used to listen to this guy named Jimi Hendrix, and his album was Are You Experienced?
Yes, yes.
And this is really what it is. It's the Experience Manager. So rather than doing testing, what you do is you put it in front of end users and you go, well, what's the easiest way to do this? Or what's the fastest way? Or in this situation, I guess it's applying for passports and visas online. I think that's
absolutely
the whole idea.
Yeah.
And this has to be done securely and efficiently. And you have to respond to these because after all, these are human beings and there's 200 million of them. And they want to be, my daughter just applied for a visa to go to a country in Africa. And I imagine it never dawned on me, but she might have used this tool.
She probably did. I mean, the fact is that lots of people around the world use this tool. It's a very important website, travel.state.gov. As you mentioned with your daughter's case, it impacts what people can and can't do. It may even impact, telling you if you should even go there in the first place. So they broadcast the warnings around any sort of safety issues or, things like that, so that citizens both inside and outside the country know what to expect when they get there.
And in a dynamic situation like we're experiencing now, it makes sense to have status updates that are current and not behind the times, because so she gets on the plane to Lagos, and halfway over there she finds out there's an Ebola problem. No, you want to know maybe yeah. before you leave.
Yeah, that's probably something you want to know about beforehand.
Before you leave. Well, we're going to have to end this interview and maybe in the future talk about experience management in the federal government and agencies that deal with customers and consumers. Maybe they have to take and put their marketing hat on, or at least their customer experience hat on, to improve the experience. And I'm sure we'll talk more about the State Department in the future. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Tim McLaughlin, CEO of Siteworks. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you, John.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of Lectromech, providing solutions to design, certify, and maintain aircraft wire systems. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 9, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.